Margaret Prescott, host and produced by Margaret Prescott, heard Monday through Thursday at 2 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up at 3 p.m. all the way until 5 p.m. A big thank you to those listeners who have so generously donated during our most recent fund drive. You are the reason why we call this listener-sponsored media, and we thank you for that. Make sure whatever premiums that you requested, whatever premiums that you requested, we will try our hardest to make sure they will be sent to you as soon as possible as you make sure you honor your pledge. It is now 3 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up here on WBAI New York and WBAI.org online.
Everybody, welcome back. Happy New Year. Welcome to the Positive Mind Talk Back at the Positive Mind. It feels like a year ago that we are back with you live, and we are glad to be here with you. We want you to call us today. We've missed you. We've missed your input, your take on things in life, in the world. How are you feeling today? We have really an interesting show in the studio today. Nasima Diane Deemer.
Hi, everybody.
To help us talk about writing. We're going to be talking all things writing today. Are you a writer? And, of course, Ben Starr is in the studio.
Hey, good to be back.
Good to be back. So we try to bring you some ideas, concepts, and guests to try and help you lead a more positively minded life. Do you know that writing is good for a positively minded life? Do you write? Have you written? When did you stop writing? Did you stop? Did you ever start? Did you ever want to write? Why aren't you writing? What was it? A famous author, I think it was Emerson, said, "Our lives are epic. We should be writing about our lives because we are epic." And so are you claiming that for yourself? Do you feel epic? And if you're not, why not? What's in your way? Writing can get you back to that sense of feeling like I'm an epic person. I'm living an epic life. Am I living my best life? If you're not, writing is a good way to try and write that, to right the ship, as it were, to get you back in line. So we're going to be talking all things writing today. We are back from the fund drive. We thank you for your participation, your contribution to the fund drive. Let's see. We did a lot of different premiums, right, Ben?
Yeah, quite a few. And thank you to everyone.
And
who
thank you to everyone. And I wanted to say that for those who signed up for the last premium last week, I want to streamline this for you. I want to get this done for you as quickly as possible. So if you donated last week, and many of you did for a session with one of our therapists here at the center, the Positive Mind Center, you can call us today after the show. And we will arrange your session. You know, we usually take a few days to get the list from BAI, but we want to get this set up for you right away. So our number here is 212-757-4488. If you signed up for a session, then we'd like you to give us a call after the show, and we'll get you an appointment today to see one of the therapists. And we talked, Nasima and Ben, about a lot of different therapists here, right?
That's right.
You know, it's a great...
You want to just...
Anything. They can take care of anything.
Yes. But I thought very much the fertility one was a really great premium. But anyway, let's move on to today. Here's a question. Who's the poet who said the following words? Since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you? Who's the poet? you guys don't answer. I don't know if you know, but
no, I've got
we
no
want
idea.
Our callers. And actually, it's a two-tiered question. If you don't know the answer, you can call us anyway and tell us what this means. Since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you.
Does that mean, like, stop nitpicking? Is that kind of is that a good simplification?
No, you always cut to the chase, Ben.
I mean, I'm trying to just distill it for my own understanding.
I don't know. I mean, I studied this stuff in graduate school, so I kind of have the answer, at least, you know, always when you're giving an answer in graduate school, you know, the teacher says, that's a very good point of view. Mm. Anybody else? And so the whole room gets to have their say, but... And then the professor at the end would tell you what it means. So, since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you. Now, wholly, which W-H-O-L-L-Y.
Right.
So, 212-757-5555. If you don't know the poet, you might know what this means. Since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you. It's actually also in a famous psychology book called The Language of Feelings by David Viscott, psychiatrist David Viscott. So he put that on his first page. So it's very relevant to mental health. So we're just checking to see, you know, if you understand. So let's talk about writing and writers. If you're a writer, we want you to call today. Have you found like writing is comforting in your life? Have you used writing at particular periods in your life?
I think we should just make sure that when we say if you're a writer.
Not a published writer.
You don't have to be an author.
No,
you
yeah,
don't
no,
have to be an
right.
author to call
I'm
us.
I'm so glad you
If you're
that.
Somebody who writes, you know.
Right.
I used to write almost daily. I used to keep a journal.
Talk to me.
I don't do it anymore.
Talk to me.
And I'm now starting to think maybe I should get back to that because I remember the benefits of that. And when I read through my old journals, it's a really incredible experience to get that perspective and look back and see where I was at the point in my growth as a person.
Right. I used to write journals too, but I would only be when I was in some sort of painful experience. When I had nobody else to talk to, I could talk to the journal. Sometimes going back to those old journals is like painful.
Cringy.
It's a bit cringy. And I can barely read my handwriting most of the time because I was probably crying when I was writing them. Yeah. But, you know, it's like that or any poetry that I would write at that time. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow. But it is kind of interesting to go back and be like, wow.
Yeah.
You know,
I kept almost
that?
A daily journal. Throughout my teenage years into my very early 20s.
Wow, good for you.
And reading
That's unusual for a younger boy, young man.
Yeah.
16, 17, 18, 19 to keep a journal. I mean, I did too.
Yeah.
I kept one also. And I still do. And I think I've always kept a journal.
See, I've walked away from it and I regret it. I really regret it. I think I'm going to start again.
Well, Ben, when you hear our show today, when you participate in this show, you'll see why you should be writing. And writing is good for your health. It's
very,
good for your physical health, and it's good for your mental health. So we're going to talk all things writing today, but we want to hear from you. We do want to hear others' voices today, and we missed you, and we're glad you donated to the fund drive. I'll talk a little bit more about the fund drive as we go and getting you out your premiums as soon as possible. But for now, we do want to hear other voices. So 212-757-5555. Since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you. Go ahead, Ben.
So we have Omar on the line who says
outstanding.
He can identify what
Let
you
me
just
hear
read. So hi, Omar. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How are you?
Was that E.E. Cummings?
You got him. You got him. E.E. Cummings. Now, here's the big question. What does it mean?
It beats the crap out of me. I mean, I was listening to you guys while I was on the road, so I had to pull over. But what I found out what was interesting about the gentleman, My birthday is October 15th. Here's a trivia to you. Why is that so relevant when me and E.E. Cummings?
You share that birthday with him.
A day before he was born, yeah. I was like, oh, snap.
Congratulations.
So this has been fate for me to make this call.
So you go online when you go home. You can get the whole poem online, okay, printed out for your birthday compadre. And listen up. We'll get to the what this is all about by the end, and you can call us back. Do you write, by the way? Are you a writer? Do you keep a journal?
There is a book in me. There is a book in me.
Trust me, there's a book in me.
I know it.
I hear it, Omar.
Yes.
You have a strong voice. I'm sure if you put it down on paper, people would buy
it. I get that a lot about my voice. Much obliged.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right, my friend. So thank you. Keep listening while you're driving. I'm glad you pulled over. Thanks for calling today. You got us started.
Likewise.
It's nice to hear our voices at TalkBack at the Positive Mind. We're so glad to be getting people to call us again. So, all right, we have the second part of the question, who wrote it? And, again, you can get that online. But understanding what it means is the harder part. So I'm curious about what got you guys to stop writing your journal. Did you feel like you stopped growing? I mean, for me, it's been a point of continuity through the years. Mm-hmm. You know, I can point to 1987, my journal from then, the color. It was an orange cover, you know, and 1993. And, you know, it's a way for me to check in with what I was feeling, what I was going through. What were the major events going on in my life?
I kind of think, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, Facebook has taken over my time
that's
for
a great
writing.
Point. What yeah, a shame. A great point.
Social media. Mm. You know, it's like my reposting, posting something about myself is kind of like a diary. And now they give you these things where you can see what you did, you know, years ago, and you can go back and look at your memories. And it's really bizarre. I think it's kind of taken over. I've started to reclaim my writing practice, but
because there's such a big difference
it's
between what you're posting
difference publicly
on Facebook
huge, and
what you can write privately.
Right.
Yes.
On a piece of paper that, you know, will never get copied and pasted and accidentally shared with the wrong person.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I've kind of been hiding behind, here are some of my opinions. Mm. Here's something that I would say. And here's some, you know, it's like. But I'm not writing to myself.
We've talked at length about the facade of social media and how image driven that is and how inauthentic that can be. And I think we should talk more about that in the future. Yeah. That's a whole other show. But I'm so glad that you bring that up because it's true.
Yeah.
Right? How much of our time now is just social media,
it's
Facebook,
that time.
Instagram?
Yep.
And absence of really any real experience or feeling in there, right? Every post in Facebook, I tell you, could have been written by anybody. I don't really see anybody writing anything in Facebook about their experiences. You know, there are a lot of exclamation points.
Yeah.
You know?
Now,
exclamation marks
people,
in Facebook.
I have some friends who are writers who write some really amazing things.
Really?
On Facebook, yeah.
Because usually writers like.
Yeah, no, these
treat
are
their
really
words
sharing.
Like precious gold. And, you know, Facebook, you can sort of let it out into the atmosphere and it's gone. But writers treasure their words. So it's interesting. There
really
should be. If anybody knows a good website of good Facebook author postings.
Well, I don't think that. I think
let
it's
us
really
know
just
here at the Positive Mind.
Well, I mean, who's on your feed?
I tend to agree with you, Kevin. What I remember from Facebook, because I quit Facebook several years back, but from what I remember, it was variations on a theme. People would share, hey, these are pictures of my vacation, pictures of my child. Mm-hmm. Right, pictures of this great event in my life, my wedding, my kid's graduation, whatever it was.
Yeah. I guess I'm just lucky. I have some friends that are willing to share some pretty deep stuff.
You know, when we think about published authors and writing in general, it's usually the dark writing that gets people captivated that they'll pay money for, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in Facebook, everybody's like, or most, I don't use it a lot, so I don't know, but most people are upbeat. The writing they're writing is like, you know, excitement.
But so, I think it's a place where a lot of people experiment with writing some stuff that's, you know, that's hard-hitting or exposing or vulnerable. And really, I mean, it's like if you know your friends on Facebook, you can share it. It does open to vulnerability, and a lot of people can get some some feedback on it that they may not want. But I really personally have read some really touching things.
I guess it can be out there.
It's very cool.
That's good to hear. Great.
It's another forum.
Not knocking it. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, but I'm just,
We're talking about, you're saying that Facebook writing is not the same as the journal writing that you used
it's
to do.
Not,
and you kind of want to get back to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
212-757-5555. Go ahead, Ben.
You're tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about writing today. And Kevin started the show by reading a quote, an excerpt from a poem. And he asked you out there, who wrote it? Do you know who wrote it, first of all? And second of all, do you know what it might mean? We heard from Omar, who correctly identified that it was written by E.E. Cummings. We're going to hear from someone else who has a take on what it means. We have Brian on the line. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Hey, how are you doing? Get it? Did you know it was E.E. Cummings?
I didn't, but I thought that it was a really wonderful quote especially in regards to today's program in relationship to writing. I'm a filmmaker, and I also teach film production at SUNY Purchase. And so
great.
I'm constantly writing my own work, talking to my students about their work, seeing what works, what doesn't work. And I kind of have an approach with myself and with my students, which is that creative work is better felt than understood. Yeah. And I think that a lot of young artists are writers, for that matter, you know, you can read books about structure, can over-intellectualize things and get pretty lost in the weeds. But to just kind of feel it with your gut and feel it with your heart, that is a creative path forward that can be very helpful, especially when it comes to something like a kiss, something passionate. I mean, that's an act of creation, isn't it? So if writers are listening out there, I would just say, forget about structure, put it on hold for a second, forget what you read in a book, just tell what you feel in your heart, and you may turn off that self-critical mind that has to understand it, or, you know, has to put it into a box. Life is a little weird, and life felt from the gut can be very exciting.
You must be a really good teacher, Brian. You broke it down for us really well, and you have a nice soothing voice. So I'm sure your students are really listening to you. And that makes a lot of sense. What we're talking about is writing without the critic in your ear, without somebody always correcting you. Do you use that? Do you talk about that a lot?
Absolutely, because, I mean, you know, I'm driving actually with my friend who's a photographer, and both of us went to graduate school, and too much, we always have this conversation, too much school can actually be a hurtful thing to the creative process and get you away from some of the most exciting things about exploring who you are with a tool like a camera or a pen or anything of clay for that matter.
Exactly.
So that school can turn the self-critical voice up real high, and the voice that whispers is usually the one that leads to the most exciting discoveries. But I don't know, it's hard to find that, especially when I think we live in a culture where sometimes the voice that screams at a lot of people follow or think it's the voice to listen to.
Yes, indeed. You got it right. The whisper is the one that really works. Brian, thanks for the call.
Right.
We're going to comment
thanks
more on what you said, but thank you for giving us your insights. That's perfect.
It's a great show.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. Thank you so much. Go ahead. Sorry. 212-757-5555. He kind of breaks it down. I want to hear more about the word syntax and the word kiss and the word feeling. Since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you. Yeah, the word syntax, it just sort of jumps out at you. What does that mean? What does that conjure up for you in terms of writing? You know, so what we're talking about is the beneficial effects of writing, but it's not any kind of writing. All the research we've done to prepare for the show, you know, has said that just writing in itself is not necessarily therapeutic. Like, you can write your feelings in a diary and just free flow for 20 minutes, which is fine. Right.
Yeah, it's a way to like I would do. It's like sharing when somebody isn't there to share it with. It's like I can share it with my diary. I don't have any judgment coming from my diary about anything I say. I can say everything. I can say horrible things. I can say beautiful things. It doesn't matter.
Right. Right. And will you feel different afterwards?
Sometimes, but also sometimes no. It just kind of can keep going.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So
again, it feels good to do it. Maybe the continuity, like these young women, young girls get their first diary at what time, what age?
I don't know.
Are girls still getting diaries?
I don't know. You know, they've got a phone now, so that's what they get.
Well, there's another tradition
diary,
gone.
I do love giving diaries to people. I think it's a beautiful sort of expression of like, oh, here's some space for you. I do find sometimes when I do journal or diary that, you know, I'll start with a thought that's been going through my head over and over again. But as I write it and start to write about it, it starts to change. Things can start to sort of shift, or I can follow up with other ideas, and I'll make links and things like that that I may not have made in my regular rumination about something.
Exactly. You're using the word rumination. So writing that encourages rumination is not good. That's not the kind that you want to perseverate on a certain topic and keep going over and over and over the same thing.
Right.
No, the writing that's really therapeutic is they're calling narrative expressive writing. So it's really taking something and making it something in the past, something that's happened. Right? So there's, you know, basically four types of writing. You can write about what happened, what was in the past. You can write about what's happening, what happens, which is in the present, what will happen, which is in the future, and what should happen. You know, so a lot of essays, op-ed pieces, all these things in journals, professional opinions. These are the shoulds. But the kind of writing that is therapeutic and beneficial, they're finding, is what's called narrative expressive writing. So you take an experience of yours, a trauma experience. The hardest part, you know, what they
just admit,
they found with like divorcing couples that are fighting, that are separating, and they put them in a room and they gave them this exercise to write about this process, write about the divorcing process. And for 3 days, write for 20 minutes, at least 20, but not more than a half an hour on this process. And so what they found is what's emerging is that these divorcing people are learning to write as if it's happened. And somehow writing about it as if it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, that it's helping them with the struggle. I mean, getting a divorce is one of the biggest stressors. It's one of the top five stressors in life. Every year it comes up as one of the top five stress, if not top three.
Yeah.
So this is really very useful information that if you're going through a hard time, a difficult transition, that's the perfect time to take out a pen and for 20 minutes, maybe a half hour the most, to start writing about it as if it's already happened. So that you can give it a beginning, you can give it a middle, and you can give it an end. And you're not just writing, he did, he said, she said, and all the things that are going to churn up these feelings. So I talk about trauma, and you can talk about it also. But it can help with, like, not, you know, with any kind of emotional imbroglio. How's that for a word?
That's a great word. Because that is what it feels like. You're in like this soup of all kinds of stuff and it's boiling and you can't get your head above water. Right. And I think in that writing exercise of like what was the beginning of this? What is the middle? What is the end? It's a real organizing structured kind of way. And that's the thing. When you're in a transition or a traumatic experience, it's very disorganizing. And this kind of forces your prefrontal cortex to come in, come online, and give some order to the disorder. And I can really understand why that would be very helpful.
Right.
Very helpful. Because it's just something to hang on. It's a structure to hang on to. It's a, okay, I have the narrative now. It has some form. And I can either manipulate it if I want to or change. You know, it's like it just sounds very soothing to me to be able to do that.
And
some empowerment.
Can you talk, because we did this research and we talk about the physical, like the heart variable rate, right? The HVR, it's called?
Heart rate variability. Yeah.
So it lowers your heart rate. I mean, just think about it. If you've been married for 20 years and you're getting a divorce and you've had a divorce, you can write the story of my relationship. I met her on a cold, rainy night, you know, we met at a party and then, you know, just take it from there.
Yeah.
But again, we're avoiding all this emotionality. You're giving it a structure, like you say, so that it can lodge as a story rather in your prefrontal cortex rather than as a bunch of feelings in the reptilian part of your brain.
Exactly. It starts to, move those feelings, those fears, whatever it is, into the front of your brain and give it some context. And perspective, you can get some perspective on things when you put them out in front of you and you write them out and you order them and you bring some logic to it. I think it's really helpful.
So we're looking for callers today, 212-757-5555. We want to hear if you've done this intuitively. I mean, I don't know why I started writing a journal. I wasn't feeling negative feelings. I just, wanted to mark my days, mark my life. I think great people were writing journals. I guess I wanted to be great too. So I started writing a journal.
We have some samples.
Oh gosh.
And maybe this will take us into our musical break.
Here's a great sample. Incapable of living with people, of even speaking to them. Complete immersion in myself. Thinking of myself. Apathetic, witless, fearful. I have nothing to say to anyone. Ever.
Does anyone have a guess as to who that is?
Well, we can't keep them holding on to that. That was that, right? Do you have a guess, Ben?
No.
No idea. Okay. That was Kafka. But here's what Andy Warhol wrote, right? And Bianca was driving me crazy, saying how she's researching my days in Pittsburgh for her book on great men. And she went on and on about how I broke the system. And I felt like saying, look, Bianca, I'm just here. I'm just a working person. How did I break the system? God, she's so dumb. So, all bets are off in your journal when you're writing your journal.
Yeah.
And you're reporting your thoughts. So 212-757-5555, has writing been a comfort for you through your life?
And have you used it therapeutically?
Do you know people that are writing? Do write a journal. Do you think, is it a great thing to talk about on a date? Do you have a journal? Do you keep a journal? I think it's a great thing to
I think it would show mention. Whether the person is sort of introspective.
Did you ever tell a dating girl that you were dating that you were writing a journal? I wonder how women react to that.
It might be scary, actually, too.
The truth is, a lot of what I was writing about was about women in my life. So,
And that's something that, I think a partner might be a little suspicious of.
Or want to find.
I would never read anyone's journal.
But you know what, Nasima? You're an honest person.
Yeah.
You can't say that about everybody. And I know.
I know, it's terrible.
And you know who you are. A lot of you would read someone's journal. Let us know, 212-757-5555, if you've ever done it and if you regretted what you read.
Yeah.
That's another angle, Ben.
Climbing into somebody's brain. Yeah. It really is. And their
heart.
It's
definitely like a violation.
It's a major violation.
Listen, a lot of people now have no qualms about picking up their partner's cell phone and looking through that. And that's a very similar breach of privacy.
Yeah. That's a boundary issue. We can talk about that another day.
212-757-5555. We're going to take a musical break and come right back to talk to you about writing, your writing, our writing. Everybody should be writing. It's good for your mental and physical health. Back after this. Paperback writer. That's not the kind of writing we're talking about, but that's good, too. If it were only
sure
that easy,
is.
I want to be a paperback writer, if only it were that easy. But we don't, you know, we're not shooting for the stars. It's just any kind of writing. Do you have a journal or a piece of paper by your side? Are you a traveler? I mean, do you travel for business? How do you keep time? Do you notice the cities that you're traveling to? I mean, is 1 year a blur from the next? I mean, I think there are so many professions where keeping a journal, you know, could be really, really helpful. Here's one from Robert Scott. You remember Scott? Robert Scott, who traveled to the North Pole?
Oh, okay.
Since the 21st, we've had a continuous gale from west, southwest, and southwest. We had fuel to make 2 cups of tea apiece and bare food for 2 days on the 20th. Every day, we've been ready to start for our depot 11 miles away. But outside the door of the tent, it remains a scene of whirling drift. I do not think we can hope for any better things now. We shall stick it out to the end. But we're getting weaker, of course, and the end cannot be far. Famous journal. Robert Scott's journals. Oh, they're famous journals that we talk about. And suffering and pain and endurance, right?
Writing was such a... It was the thing that everybody who had an education could do. And I think in the old days, that was it. That was the way they kept track of so much. Mm. I mean, it's really incredible how important writing is.
We're taking your calls at 212-757-5555. We had a caller who wanted to talk about how social media is your journal today, but we lost you. I don't know if it was a disconnect. You hung up.
Yeah.
Love to hear back from you. 212-757-5555. What do you make of that? Social media is your journal. We touched on it briefly. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I like to go deep in my writing. Right. I mean, and I feel bad when I've written and I didn't get to anything new or deep. And I can't imagine that I would let myself get deep on social media. I mean, it's great if it works for you. And my question to the person who finds their journal that way is, what does it do for you physically? I mean, when I've had a successful time of writing, you know, I kind of feel some closure in myself. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've closed out a topic that I've been wanting to explore. And by the time I'm finished writing about it, my body softens and feels more at ease, and I breathe deeper. And all of these things are measured, you know, when they did these tests on the benefits of writing, that your physiology changes. Mm-hmm. So I can't, for me, I couldn't imagine Facebook being, or social media, a place where I would feel physically changed after I've written it, other than to be more vigilant and on guard. So anyway,
yeah, I feel like it's a different kind of writing, social media, because you do know that somebody's going to read it, that you're sending it out into the ether. If you have friends, they are going to read it, and I think it's a different state of writing. You might be a little more measured in it. You might, you know, go mm-hmm. back and check it. Mm-hmm. Whereas journal writing, you're not really expecting anyone to read it. Although I know when I was personally writing a journal, I think in the back of my mind, I kept wanting somebody to read it on some level. It was very interesting. I discovered that recently. I was like, wow, you know, when I used to write journals, there was a part of me that was like, oh, I wish somebody would find this and read it.
212-757-5555. I know we had a call way back to, and a woman was talking about the therapeutic benefits of journal writing. I guess she's not listening. That was when we were at the 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock slot. Mm-hmm. But she was really convinced that it saved her life, that writing in a journal saved her life. And, you know, here's one thing. They're finding people who go through surgery, if they're writing about the surgery, that they heal faster.
That makes total sense to me.
You know, there's a thing called punch wound when I think when it's called a punch wound that you get in your upper arm, and they found that people who write mm-hmm. that wound from a needle that they healed faster when they wrote. So 212-757-5555, we have Ken on the line.
Yes, hi.
Hey, Ken.
I wanted to share two things. One is I keep a record of the funny things that are in New York, the images, and also conversations that I hear on the subway all over New York.
Wonderful. That's great.
And the second thing is I mostly write plays, and I wrote a play about my relationship with my father, very, very difficult. He survived Auschwitz. And
what's the name of the play?
Work Makes Free.
Work Makes Three. All right.
Which was the inscription over Auschwitz. And it plays back my memories with my dad. It expresses feelings that I have towards him. I play both parts in it, or the actor plays both parts, represented by objects or a puppet head. And besides asking him questions how he survived, the most significant part for me is the last scenes are scenes that I wished would have occurred between us.
Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful thought. Beautiful
cathartic.
Idea.
Very cathartic.
Right.
How does it feel to enact those scenes?
So many tears came after writing this play. He died in 1972. He actually killed himself.
Oh.
And so many tears came through for me and were so helpful to release so much of thoughts of mine that I had contributed in a big way to that and all of that. And the last part of the play, the son says, Dad, I wish I knew you without the Auschwitz in you, and I wish I knew myself without the Auschwitz you put in me.
Wow. What a gift you're giving us, Ken. Thanks for sharing it
with
us.
Well, I hope other people are able to write their traumas, any form, feelings, characters, even make-believe characters, not themselves at first, to free themselves up to write.
Indeed. Indeed. Thanks
Beautiful,
for testifying
Ken.
For us.
Thank you.
Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you very much for letting me share.
Sure. 212-757-5555. We have two more on hold, but go ahead, Nasima.
Yeah. What Ken describes is a wonderful way to work through a traumatic experience, to write the way you want it to go. And that can help your nervous system have a different experience of that time. Because you know what? It already happened. You don't need to keep rehashing it. That's a truth that happened in the past. But right now, your body can hear a different story. You can tell a different story, and that can help your body feel so much safer and more alive and release, as Ken was saying, release the Auschwitz from your body. You can do it. You can write your life story as if it didn't happen. It's a really, really wonderful way to move.
I had so much to say. I
trauma.
Really wish we could have followed up, but we had people on hold. So thank you,
Ken.
212-757-5555. We have Colleen on the line. Great to get people calling back. Hey, Colleen.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm
good.
Back.
Well, welcome back. We're glad to hear you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be back.
Good to have you.
I happened to be driving around for work, and I turned you guys on and was really, really intrigued by what I was hearing. And what came to mind was I was doing some cleaning recently, and I found old journals. And I started going through and reading them. And what an eye-opener it is to kind of look back and see how you've grown, how you've healed, how you've progressed, and also how
you haven't changed at all.
Right, exactly. How you haven't changed at all. How at your core you're still the same.
Right.
And I also heard, you know, someone who was talking about using journaling and how journaling saved her life. I don't know if that was a call or if you were about. And I thought too, I was during school, particularly junior high, I was just bullied mercilessly. And what worked for me, what I did is I wrote about it. I just wrote. I didn't censor myself. I had a great therapist who told me, she's like, just write about it. I didn't censor myself. I would just write whatever came out. And I think if I didn't have that, I don't know if I would be alive.
That's true.
I think that kids today don't have that. They have social media where they can go and.
So tell them, Colleen, what they don't know. So let's put it in your own words, how it helped you and what kids and people who are using social media, they don't know.
There's something. When you're writing and you know that probably no one will ever see it, you can write without filtering yourself. There's no need to kind of put on that mask, to put on that protective armor and say, okay, well, this is going out on Facebook, so I have to make sure that, you know, I use the right slang and I say the correct thing and I have a cute selfie to go with it.
Right.
You don't have to worry about any of that when you're writing in your journal. You just get to write.
And that feels really good.
It does.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thanks for saying it for us. That's what the purpose of today's show is, Colleen. Good to have you back after the fun drive. Thanks. And why did you stop writing? I mean, you know, are you writing now in a journal?
Why did I stop? I'm not really writing so much in a journal. Right now, I'm on a poetry kick. I go between the two. I'll write poetry for a while, and then I'll journal, and then I'll write poetry. It kind of, whatever comes out, really.
Do you do any vision in writing, envisioning, like what I want writing?
In general, or?
In general. Like, I think for you, I'm picking up that for you, picturing how your life, how you might want it to be. What might be productive? Because you're not stuck in the past. You sound generally upbeat and with a lot of energy. So it makes me think. Well, maybe she should write about envisioning. What does she vision for her life? What does she want more of? What does she not have right now? And where does she want to get to? Does any of that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
You always get me. You get me right there. Right in my heart.
See, you're easy. Colleen, thanks for calling.
Oh, of course. Thank you very much. I'm gonna think about that one.
Yeah. Tell us how it works out.
I'm sorry?
Don't think about it. Just do it. And tell us how
just
it works
it.
Out. Yeah, just do it.
All right, I will.
You're a doer, so go to it.
I'll just do it. All right, thanks.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
212-757-5555. So, you know, no trauma there. She had many experiences, but, you know, it sounds like the writing helped her process it.
Yes.
Digest it. And tell more. You know about this in terms of trauma
what it does. Yeah, what I find interesting, like if you're writing through a traumatic experience or through your high school and stuff, and that experience of going back and reading it, you might get a sense, and it's something that I often have my clients sort of feel into, is like that part of you, that through line, that there's a you that experienced this was able to see it and see it separately. It's like you get a sense, like you said, you that a part of you hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
That's like your essence. Like you get a little whiff of your essence. Like, oh, this person keeps sort of moving through these experiences, and these experiences happen, but it isn't necessarily me. And it gives you a chance to sort of separate the experience from the me who had the experience, right?
Yes.
So that helps give a little bit of space in that traumatic experience. It's like, okay, it's outside of me, or I can go back to my journals of that time and be like, wow, you know, I still feel her. I feel that person who went through it, and she made it. She made it through all that.
Right.
And I have a greater appreciation for myself getting through that. Like, there's a part of me that wasn't touched by whatever happened.
I think it'd be really useful for kids who are being bullied.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Yes.
Now, to write a journal.
Years
from now, when you're beyond it and have gotten through it, that you might recognize what the painful feelings are. I think a lot of people that are bullied don't know why they're being bullied and don't know what they're experiencing.
But
it can be very helpful to write it down.
And so empowering.
And helpful
to
deal with trauma and help people through trauma.
Yeah.
We have Karen on the line who says that that's been the case for her. Hi, Karen.
Hi. Yes. So I've gone through a very traumatic life experience and came out of it a bit lost about what to do, what direction to take. And someone had advised me to try The Artist Way. And that book... there's a portion of the assignment in that, which is to write 3 pages, just stream of consciousness, you know, and I found that
every
to be
morning,
like journal.
First thing in the morning.
Every morning. Yeah. Every morning.
Yep.
And, you know, I never journaled growing up, and I actually had, like, a very bad reaction to it, generally speaking.
Yep. Uh-huh.
But when I started doing this, it was amazing because it allowed me to develop a relationship with myself and to talk to myself and learn to be more patient and not judge myself in those moments. And it really helped me through a difficult time and to understand what I was going through at that moment.
Do you still do it?
I don't. It's like I started taking up different things. I started running and meditating.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get back into it, but it's... I think you can sort of develop a relationship with yourself in different ways and work through
trauma
in different ways. I think I was just trying on a lot of different things, but I do miss it. I did it great for about 5-6 months, and it also kind of saved me. So,
how about on weekends?
Fantastic.
How about on weekends, on Saturdays, when you don't have to go to work, just once a week?
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I need to just start back. I can be kind of hard on myself. It's like all or nothing. But
I understand. Yeah.
Just curious, Karen, what do you make of a caller earlier who said that today's journal is social media, and how do you see that, and how do you see the benefits of the private paper journal compared to social media?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes back to your relationship with yourself, and social media, is a filter. So when you get social media involved, I don't know how in touch people are. It almost seems as though people want to portray themselves a certain way and to give off a certain image. And when you're journaling, It's just you with yourself, raw, real, good, bad, ugly. And when it comes to social media, it's just, it's a filter, and everyone wants to give off a certain image. So it's not even comparable, you know? Journaling is just a very unique personal experience.
I think she's right about this image thing. You know, that's a perfect word for it. You don't have to live up to an image when you're writing in the morning pages, when you're not putting it out to the public.
And you can be real. And I think it's a great proving ground for learning how to be real.
Yeah.
In a strange way. Yeah, yeah. It's like you start to get the language of your reality.
Yeah. Karen, you sound real. You sound really real.
I try. You know, that's my motto. Keep it real.
Did you get to the point in the book where she talks about writing with your left hand or your non-dominant hand?
No, so I never. It's funny because I started doing it, but I dropped the program, the artist way, and I just kept journaling. So
okay.
I never actually got to do it.
Yeah, well, try that exercise, you know. What's your dominant hand, right or left?
Right.
So she says you access something really, really special when you write with your non-dominant hand. Of course, everybody's in such a rush these days, but, you know, it's a really great exercise. You might have some fun playing with it a little bit.
Yeah, I'll definitely give it a shot. And I want to try the artist way again, give that a shot. But.
25th anniversary edition, I think, just came out. Anyway, go ahead. Okay, so Karen, thanks for calling us.
Thank you so much. Oh, bye-bye.
Great. 212-757-5555. It's a famous book, but and a famous process. But again, it's about the first thing in the morning. That's called morning pages. That you don't talk to anybody. You don't turn on anything. You know, you're not stressed. You wake up and you start to just write. Stream of consciousness. Now, this is one aspect of the benefits, both physical and psychological, mental health, of writing, where you're not, the critic is asleep. The critic is not awake yet.
Right.
The critic isn't telling you where you have to go, what you have to do, what you didn't do, what you need to finish. That's why the first thing in the morning, these morning pages wait for you, and you just free write. So there's no worries about commas and punctuation or any spelling or anything like that. And I think she's telling us, you're right. She's telling us that, you know, it mobilized things. It got her to through a dark period, a hard time.
Right. I think it's just a great way to make space for yourself. There's just so much making space that happens in taking that time to write those pages, in getting all of those thoughts and feelings and emotions out onto paper, out of your body. It gives you space to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the morning can be the most trying time.
And it's
when you're going through a hard time. You know, you wake up and it's like, there it is again, the trying time. Okay, let me clear the decks a little before I head into it.
And for people who are dealing with serious trauma or depression, this is a common experience in the mornings. There's a moment when you wake up where you forget about what you're going through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it could be seconds, it could be minutes, not more than minutes though.
Yeah.
Where it hits you again.
Yeah.
You know, right.
I'm depressed.
You know, this person just died.
Oh, so something like that. Before those thoughts kick
right.
in.
Yeah. And
I see what you mean. Right.
Yeah. And that's powerful. And that's so tough. I've dealt with it, you know, after trauma. This is something that a lot of people who are dealing with trauma or who are, you know, not everyone wakes up and from that very first moment is thinking about their problems, their issues. There's an unconscious little gap of a few seconds to a few minutes.
I mean, that's a good thing, Ben. I mean, and you want to expand that time even further, right? You want to make that as big as possible. Like, why does that thought jump in there? Why not stretch it out? And 3 pages in the morning, that's why morning pages, can stretch out that amount of time, create that space that you're talking about, Nasima.
Right.
That you don't get caught back in your story. And doing this research, I came across an interesting fact that it's estimated that we adults have over 60,000 thoughts a day.
Wow.
So like Ben says, that first thought about, oh, I'm depressed, mm-hmm. comes in. Maybe not the first thought you have. I mean, my first thought in the morning is, that was a great sleep, or mm-hmm. that wasn't such a great sleep, you know, or, you know, I'm sizing it up.
Maybe it's a dream you wake up out of.
Yeah. But, you know, and then my story kicks in on the way to the shower or whatever. And, you know, they're finding that 60,000 thoughts, 95% of them are the same thoughts you had yesterday.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think Ben's point is a really good one.
It's kind of a bummer.
It is a bummer,
right? But I think writing, when you write, you get out all these old thoughts. So, for instance, when Ken was sharing about his dad, I mean, he probably finished that. He got to the end of those feelings, possibly.
Right.
And or at least not as heavy the feelings. He got out what he wanted to say. And so he probably doesn't have as many of those thoughts. Mm-hmm. Intruding is the word, all day long, because he finished that topic and maybe he's moved on. I don't know. So I think you're right about creating this space and about trying to stretch out that amount of time to make that space bigger. 212-757-5555. Peter, is it the Peter on the line?
The Peter.
Hey,
Hi, Peter.
How are you?
I'm good. This is really like the hangover from all the political talk. Because the language we're so used to hearing during the build-up to yesterday is talking to people in general. The opposite of that is a journal where you're intimatizing, not generalizing. Not
there
talking
you
to
go,
people
making
in general.
Up wor- you're going making
in
up words intimate- again, Peter.
Huh?
There you go, making up words again.
I got to coin a word, like, instead of in general, in intimacy.
Yeah, I love it.
When you're making a journal, it's like, who am I trying to talk to? I'm just talking to myself.
Right.
I mean, this is as intimate as you get.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, right? So, or even for interpersonal communication, you want to talk to the person you're talking to, like, you're the only one in the world. I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Not in general. You're
actually talking to a real person.
You're not a demographic, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not a person in general. I'm a person in particular. I'm me.
Right. Right.
And mm-hmm. so, it actually, so that quote in the beginning, the E. E. Cummings quote, I think that mm-hmm. that has to do with transcending the ingredients of language. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
syntax.
This and that. I mean, in music composition, you go through that when I'm learning, I studied music, you know, I want to play something and go, oh, that's great. I said, well, major second chord, first inversion, and then I do this tritone substitution, and people don't want to hear the ingredients.
Yes, there you go, right.
The syntax of my music, let's get to it, you know, it's like,
yes.
How does it make you feel? And actually, so what I told Alex was, I was at an open mic a few years ago, and there was a woman there, and she had never been there, as far as I know, and she recited a poem that she wrote. And I listened to it, and I don't remember what it was about, but like when she sat down, her name was Olivia, I said, Olivia, that poem was about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so I could just tell it was like it had transcended word syntax, even meaning. I just got like that was like from your diary. It was about you.
Yeah.
It transcended the words.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was interesting that I remember from our exchange, because I said I wrote a caption about me. About my life, would you like to hear? She says, "Okay." And this has different forms, like you see a movie, like where you have the name of the movie, Jaws, and it says,
mm-hmm.
then there's a log or where it says, "Just when you thought it was safe to go in the water,"
right?
And
the
then
caption.
There's log lines, there's different degrees of detail.
Yes.
And then I said, "So I wrote a caption about myself. Would you like to hear?" She says, "Yes." I said, Having risen from the depths of despair, I find myself compelled to care. My life has become an invitation for us to rise to the occasion. And I just let it hanging there, like, that's kind of the caption for my life. I said, you
one
might
more
want
time.
To write a huh?
One more time, Peter. Go ahead.
Having risen from the depths of despair, I find myself compelled to care. My life has become an invitation for us to rise to the occasion.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just left it like, I said, why don't you know, write a caption about your life? And it can change over time. Now
sure.
I'm talking to her, like, not knowing, like, this young girl, and like, she bared her soul, whatever, taking a chance reading her poem, and now who's this weirdo talking to her? And she was silent, and she said to me, It's a privilege to meet you.
Yeah, you bet, Peter. You got it. You got the actual meal, not the ingredients. So
that's a kind of like, she probably doesn't remember that I said that, and I don't remember her poem, but it's just a kind of like, I get it on a core level of like, you know.
Right. A beautiful exchange.
Like, yeah, a beautiful exchange. It's like getting to the essence of like, we shared something. There was this honesty, bedrock of honesty.
Yeah.
Yes. Beautiful.
Peter, you're taking us through a musical break. Thank you for
calling in,
shedding light on the meaning of syntax and the ingredients and all of that. We'll talk more about it in the second hour. Have a good one.
Okay,
thanks.
Great.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Are we going to hear some music?
Two of the Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI in New York City. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue and Nassima Diane Deemer, broadcasting live from the Positive Mind Center on West 57th Street in Midtown Manhattan. We're so happy to be back with you, back from our fun drive, hearing from you. It's so great when we get to really have you participate and get your input. From Omar, Brian, Ken, Colleen, Karen, Peter, all of you who called in and shared your view and your feelings on the subject. It's a very personal subject, a very intimate subject, I would say, Kevin and Nassima.
Intimatizing.
Yeah.
Right?
Intimatizing. So I have a question. I have a thought. You know, when we were coming up with this topic, I was like, what was it like to learn to write as a kid? Do you remember
brutal.
That experience?
Brutal.
I mean, I think there's
which
a lot
which is a shame.
Of,
I think they're teaching kids to write in a very, very different way than they used to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not teaching kids right out of the bat to, like, worry about commas and punctuation, capitalization. I know that there are some parents out there that say, oh, I want my child to you know, have perfect handwriting and structure and all that. And I think the wave has been to not introduce the critic into the young developing mind as it's trying to give shape to its thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, grammar is definitely important, but I would say handwriting is irrelevant.
It's becoming so, and it's kind of interesting.
For a young kid in grade school, by the time they're going to really be out in the world writing for business or career purposes, let's say, handwriting will be irrelevant. I mean, everything happens over email.
Yeah.
Everything happens over text or email. So,
do you think that's a bad thing? I mean, the death of
there is something that's being
the
lost. There's a big difference they have shown if students take handwritten notes or they're typing on their computer. You're using a different part of your brain when you're handwriting. It's linking both sides of the brain a little bit more than if you're typing. There's an artistry to handwriting that's being lost. And there's also fine motor skills that aren't being developed.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of handwriting, is the development of fine motor skills.
And yet history really is changed, though, isn't it? I mean, cursive writing already died.
Yeah, cursive is dying. I mean, it's a lost art, but we got to do something with our... I mean, I guess maybe video games are bringing up the fine motor skills, but it is, there is something to putting pen to paper that is a very different experience than typing.
Here's a question.
I just happen to agree with you, Nassima, wholeheartedly. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I know.
There was a time where people said, wow, look, young girls don't know how to sew anymore. What's going on in this world? You know, I mean, it's just the ebb and flow of... Right. I think.
There's something. But however, that's coming back. I think it's going, you know, artisanally. There's like an artisanal pencil, you know, sharpener guy. So, I mean, coming back on some levels. You know, it's like you can bring it back. But it's an important art form. And I think children's handwriting is suffering.
I remember as a kid, my dad showed me one day. My dad sharpened a pencil with a knife, really sharp knife, and I was blown away. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what do you think a pencil sharpener is? it's just a sharp blade.
Right.
But,
and then you started doing it in school and showed all your friends, look at this, man, right?
And then just think, your personality comes out in your handwriting.
Absolutely.
Sure.
That's, you know, absolutely. There's all kinds of studies about handwriting and personality.
Does Stephen King still write his novels with a pen? I think he does. I don't know if anybody knows that. For hour two, you can tell us. I know he's written a book on writing, 212-757-5555. He's probably the most prolific writer out there. I wonder. I know John Updike used to kept writing with his... you know, yellow legal pad and a pen. And I think you're probably right. I mean, me thinking about it, I write differently when I'm typing than when I'm writing. But I think I could see writing much faster with a computer.
Well,
but
and,
I do
yeah.
feel more connected, more personal, more intimate.
It's much
with
more
what
intimate.
I'm writing. So you wouldn't write it. Would you write a journal in a computer?
I think it depends on how I'm really, it's so interesting. It depends on how I'm feeling. And like to handwrite, is like, I am pretty much saying I'm never going to read this again because I can barely read my handwriting sometimes. I mean, most of the time.
Yes.
So, you know, and when I'm writing emotionally, it's like I get frustrated because it's like I can't quite get the words out fast enough, and then I'm noticing that I can't read. So it's like, okay, this is like words that I'm just never going to read again on some level. So I think I've, you know, gone to the computer if it's something I think matters and something that I think I might want to go back to at some point in my life.
Right.
So it is a very different experience, and I wish my handwriting would
You can go back to school for that.
With my thoughts, but it's always been that problem. It starts out really neat, and then it gets really bad because I just start rolling, and I can't read my
handwriting. It's an experience that I think means different things to different people, and I'm wondering, what does writing mean to you? What has it brought into your life? Has it made your life better? Let us know at 212-757-5555. Has writing been an outlet for you? Has it been frustrating?
Mm-hmm.
We're just kind of kicking it around and talking about...
Yeah, I mean, there are very many therapeutic, physically effects of writing, and that's good for you. But yeah, that's a great question. What does it do for you? How does it make you feel? 212-757-5555. Do you miss it? Do you do it? I mean... have you lost contact with it? Do you want to get back to it? We've all had to write when we were in school forced. And I do think, like I said, the word was brutal when you asked what was writing like when you were young.
Learning how to write. What an empowering time, because you're really entering into the world of the spoken word. You know, as a kid, it's such a formal exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It forms thoughts and, like I said, fine motor skills, but it's like, it's from my perspective, being like the body person, it's like, it's so fascinating to me that now my thoughts can be fixed onto something. And I was even thinking about, like, you know, like cave paintings and things like that. Like,
when
it
all
started, those? You know, and think of, like, the tablets that were left, you know, of written word. It was like I'm fixing a time, a moment onto something.
You think they had time to journal back in those days?
Well, with the hammer and chisel, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Right.
The writing of something has been important throughout our history.
Yeah.
The picturing of something is,
and if you don't
so
write
important.
Or if you don't know how to write, or imagine if you're not literate or you had never learned to write or you never learned to read.
Yeah.
I mean, you are excluded from a large percentage of the population, and your life is probably not as safe, right?
Exactly.
I mean, the written word and reading the written word enables you to learn things and keep yourself safe, and not being able to read can
be very dangerous.
Diminishes your chance to be safe. So I think even writing is healthy and keeps your ability to be safe. Writing does, but also reading. Mm-hmm. Reading also keeps you safe. 212-757-5555. We are back from the fun drive. We are back for our second hour. We are talking about writing and the therapeutic benefits of writing. Just one, I'll read one. Decrease in disease symptoms and improvement in cognition. And get this, irritable bowel syndrome.
Whoa.
It, you know, and that makes sense to me.
It makes total sense to me, too.
It's a calming activity.
Yeah.
If you can keep the critic away and not worry about all these things we're talking about, that of course it's going to calm your whole system. Can you talk a little bit about the parasympathetic nervous system?
Yeah, because the vagus nerve innervates that whole gut area. It also is your social engagement system. So if you're able to write, if you're able to sit down and write and take time in your day to write, that's giving a signal to your nervous system that you are safe enough to sit down and write. Like, think about it.
Mm.
Somebody has prescribed a time for them to be secluded, if you want to be secluded, or sit on a park bench or whatever it is, and write and get your feelings out. It's very empowering as well, because it's about getting something out of you. And IBS has so much to do with, like, holding things in that are toxic in some level, and holding in feelings, and also maybe even helps you sort of sort out what's happening in your life.
Mm.
That sorting process is really important and allows you to see, oh, wait, this is stressing me. This is stressing me. This is stressing me. Maybe these don't have to stress me. You know, it's like once you get them out and you look at them like, okay, now what's really going on here? Now what, you know, it's like you can see it.
So it's kind of like, you know, when you're sitting down to write, you're automatically saying, I am safe.
Yes.
I am
safe
enough to be
able
to stop
attacked,
and spend time with myself to write.
Somebody who's being actually attacked can't sit down and write about it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that tells your nervous system, wait a minute, you know, if I'm feeling like I'm being attacked, well, if I'm sitting here and writing, that must not be true.
And people generally, respect the privacy of people who are in the act of writing. It's almost a way of announcing, I'm doing something for myself, I'm doing something.
Yeah.
As opposed to on the computer. People feel, it's okay to interrupt them while they're on the computer. This is, I'm just stretching this out a little bit, but it's been my experience when I see somebody actually writing in a journal or using a pen that I'm less inclined, I certainly won't interrupt them.
No.
Whereas if they're on the computer, you know, I might ask them a question or do something. So strange, subtle differences. So
it is.
212-757-5555. We are back from our first hour into the second hour now, trying to get your experience with the value and the importance of writing. We're picking it as a mental health topic because it is. It does increase physical and mental health. If you are writing, it's a great way. And we didn't give the research, but a gentleman from the University of Texas, James Pennebaker, did research on this. And he found in college, students who freshman year in college is a very, very difficult year.
It's so
hard. Very, that he had students who were freshmen write,
mm-hmm.
and he had a control group of nobody, you know, no freshmen writing.
Yeah.
And he had them do it for three times for 20 minutes for 4 weeks.
Hmm.
And by the end of the year, so that was in the fall, and by the end of the year, the students that did the writing, three times less visited the health center for treatment.
That's great. That's a big
difference. Three times. So if 20 kids went to the health center, only six mm-hmm. in the intervention group, in the study group. 212-757-5555. We have Tiana on the line. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Sure.
I would just you could point to the fact that remember the Oprah show? She used to talk about healing and working with your inner worlds, and she'd say, keep a journal, you know, write in your journal every day.
Mm.
All of this is fundamental. It's attached to a classical education. It's an approach to education that's very incremental, but it's more holistic. It's more real because, like, I mean, I'm telling you, when you have, like, old things sitting about your home, as I did, like, my grandfather, my family didn't throw things away. We used to use, even though we had computers, we used the typewriter.
Uh-huh.
I love the typewriter. I think it's a good thing to teach kids with, too.
The because, sound you know, of it, yeah. Right?
Makes a great
you
sound.
You can't be hacked. You can't be hacked, right?
Right.
And you have your own printer right there. It's so great.
Oh, yeah.
So I always fell in love with the typewriter. First of all, many of them are really cool looking.
Yes,
they have great
designs.
My grandfather's typewriter. So I just feel like it's a commercial invasion of the educational process because if you have great teachers in very good schools, they don't, it's not all this frenetic machine thing, you know.
Driven,
you have the
right,
teacher goes around to each student and checks your work, and it's so great to see all the different penmanship.
Yes.
How each one has different style.
Yes.
And I used to love, you know, the teacher teaches you in cursive and you work on it on a daily basis, right?
Yes.
And she comes in and she teaches you cursive, and it's a beautiful, it's essential, right?
Yes,
it's sort of part of your stylistic thing, and you can say a lot with your writing style, you know? You could make a word real
absolutely.
Dark. Make the word real dark.
Oh,
and
sure.
I think it's
nasty
so...
underline.
How's your handwriting, Tiana? You must have really good cursive.
Well, yes, pretty much. I would say because of my wonderful, wonderful mother, she was very precocious. She went to college at 16 from a very poor family, but they stressed education, from an extremely poor family. And also my father, you know, my father, his mother actually died from starvation. That's how poor they were.
That's a trauma.
And she died at 38 after having five boys, and she died from starvation. She would feed her husband and her kids and take much less for herself. And she actually died, But all the boys became PhDs. And they're artists, musicians, and all tenured professors. But see, it's the work. See, in a way, cursive is work. You have to put in the work at an early age. That's what a classical education is about.
Yes.
Of course.
They used to teach the little kids Latin. Why not? And see, that's what my grandfather, who was very poor, came over here as a lumberjack, working as a lumberjack in Wisconsin. And then he subsequently went to seminary. He became a pastor, you know, very poor though, in poor communities, very poor, but actually an itinerant minister where he went to like five congregations in one Sunday. Five or six.
Thank you, Tiana. Sharing your story is quite beautiful.
But it's very important to learn cursive because it's like part of your inner world coming out.
I totally agree.
It's your inner world.
It's a dying art.
It shouldn't be. That's a commercialization, the weaponization of the... Assembly so line people, we don't want. Assembly line, no.
Thanks again,
Tiana.
Thank you,
Tiana.
Bye-bye.
212-757-5555. She makes a great point, Kevin, which is that it's kind of a classical education sort of thing. And when you think about it, of course, it's kind of gone the way of people who can speak Latin or study Greek mythology. These are things that were at one time much more mainstream, I want to say, in education. And, you know, it's kind of gone by the wayside, it seems.
Yeah.
And there's there's slowing down that happens when you handwrite. Sure. You know, and that's something I guess that maybe that's what I struggle with. Like really slowing down and letting it be fluid and flowing through my pen and you know, but in typing and computers it can go so fast. We're in such a fast-paced world. And this is like an invitation to slow down.
I think we have
down.
A study going on. I think there's this is more research for us. The difference between journaling with a pen and journaling with a computer.
Maybe we should start a writing group.
212-757-5555. We're in our second hour here talking about the importance and value of writing. We have Gloria on the line. Hello, Gloria?
Yes, hello.
How are you?
Fine. I'm a 87-year-old person.
Oh, you must have good handwriting.
And I keep a running, if you want to call it a journal, I keep a running account daily when I get up, what I have for breakfast, if I send out correspondence, my plan for the day. Sometimes I have philosophical thoughts. I'll put it down. And I grew up in a family where mother and father prized handwriting. Yes. And in fact, my father would be paid by people to write out their receptions for different events and whatnot.
Beautiful.
That was back in the 30s and 40s. Yeah. And then I had pen pals in the United States, and during World War II, I wrote to people in England, a man and a woman.
Right.
And I find that writing, when I write, like if I write, I write letters still to friends and so forth.
Handwritten letters.
And what I say in a letter is more creative and profound than if I was just talking to the person. It brings out certain things and thoughts and ideas, you know. And then I was appalled when I found out recently that they had stopped teaching writing in the schools at some point, and then in some schools they revived it, and they're not only teaching the children, but they have to teach some of the teachers because they don't know how to write. But if you don't know how to write or read writing, how would you read things from the past?
Right.
You know,
I
think the Constitution must be handwritten. So how would
it
you
was.
Read that? You know, and how would you read letters from, say, a grandparent or great-grandparent and so forth and so on? So writing, I think, is a wonderful skill. I don't know why they would eliminate it. Electronic devices are fine. I happen to be old school. I do not use a computer.
Right.
I don't use, all I have is a phone and pens and pencils.
So would
and
you say, Gloria,
stuff.
That this has been a friend to you through your life?
Oh, yes, yes.
Writing has been like a companion.
Writing, I don't know what I would do if I couldn't write.
Exactly.
You know, how do you make a shopping list? Although I guess the young people do it on a computer or something. I don't know. But it's very important.
No, it's not the same,
It's a skill. And then somebody jokingly said, did the Egyptians say keep journals? I think they did in a way. They kept an account of certain events and whatnot.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
there was a lot.
The man in the street didn't do it, but maybe the king's people
did it.
They're
the scribes,
and whatnot,
you know. They had scribes taking care of all
that. It's a wonderful skill.
Thank you, Gloria. Thank you for shedding light on it. I'd love to see a piece of your handwriting. You can send it to us here at the Positive Mind Center. What do you think of that?
What is your address?
119 West 57th Street.
And what is the zip? Oh, and what room are you in?
10019. We're in Suite 1100.
Suite 1100.
10019.
Yeah. Another thing, I've created poems through the years, and I didn't realize how much I was doing that, spontaneous poems. And I sometimes go to a group called the Tower League up at Riverside Church.
Okay.
And they have people who come in from certain organizations, and they lead the group in just spontaneous poems about the city, who they are, and so forth. And you would be amazed at what comes out of those sessions.
I would love to hear. I would love to read one of your poems on the air. Send it to me.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye, Gloria.
And your name?
Kevin.
Kevin. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank
you. Bye-bye.
212-757-5555. So, you know, but cursive is like, Nasima, it's a physical image, right? I mean, writing, they're talking about visual, you know, there's also visual therapy.
Mm-hmm.
There's using creative arts therapy. There's using colors and shapes and that kind of way to get space from trauma and from difficult experiences and memories.
Right. And that's almost like the more unformed sort of feelings, expressions. But when you move into the formal writing of something, mm-hmm. that's bringing it more into the prefrontal cortex, into the present moment.
Okay.
And being able to order your thoughts.
Right.
Which in traumatic experiences, your thoughts get disordered, your memories get disordered, and the memory tends to be held more in the sort of visual, mm-hmm. you know, the smells, the mm-hmm. sounds
mm-hmm.
are there, but the actual, like, what happened isn't in order. And it helps a lot with PTSD because sometimes those disordered thoughts start to get some order, especially if you start to write a narrative.
Right. And they're saying it helps with executive functioning, which is
huge
ordering a function of the executive functioning.
Right.
Prefrontal cortex is ordering your experience, organizing your surroundings, being proactive and planning for your next step. So writing about a traumatic experience, some difficult period in your life, mm-hmm. enables you to have that story in your mind rather than these amorphous, very excitable sensations and memories and feelings.
Exactly. This randomness that can happen with it. And having it in the prefrontal cortex also gives you the experience of having, you know, and writing out the experience and being safe at the same time, which is so huge for trauma. Because if you're in the PTSD flashback and you're able to write about it, you're giving your system a totally new input that this experience, I'm thinking of it, I'm writing about it, but I'm actually safe enough to write about it. So it's a huge, it's a huge thing for your mind to get it into the right place, the right perspective. Oh, that happened in the past. That's what happened. It's not happening now. Right now, I'm just writing about what happened, but that's not what's happening now. So it's a big shift.
We're gonna take a very short musical break, and we'll get back to the rest of our callers. We have not forgotten about you, John. We're gonna get right to you after the musical break, as well as the rest of you on hold. Please stay on hold.
Stay with us.
And if you'd like to weigh in, the number to call 212-757-5555. We're going to take a quick break and be right back after this.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna write words oh so sweet. They're gonna knock me off my feet. A lot of kisses on the bottom. I'll be glad I got them. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better. And close with love the way you do. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe that it came from you. Thank you. I'll be glad I got 'em. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better. And then I'll close with love the way you do. I'm gonna sit down, write myself a letter, and make believe it came, though I know it's not the same. I'll make believe it came from you.
And you can do it that way too. You can make believe it came from somebody you love. Writing, you can do at whatever you want. So you can sit right down and write a letter to yourself as if it came from a loved one.
I've done that. Not as if it's come from a loved one, but I've done it to sort of like at workshops. Mm-hmm. You'll write yourself a letter about some great inspiration or insight that you've, you know,
right,
received. And
right,
then you put it in the mail,
mm-hmm,
and you get it, or you hold it for years.
Mm.
I wrote myself a letter and said, when I turned 50. And I was like,
excellent,
I want to, and I put a note on myself to read it in, mm-hmm, 20 years.
Really? So you have it.
Yeah.
And you're carrying it.
I have it.
That's a great ritual.
And
that's
I've
a great idea. I mean,
whatever.
Every decade, every 40, 50, 60, you write yourself a letter to my future self.
Letter to my future self.
So it's a good optimist exercise if you're 70 or 80. You say, this is, yeah, for me to read when I'm 100.
This is what I'm hoping I'll be doing.
Yes. Yeah.
And then they also have it for like writing to your 16-year-old self.
Yeah.
You know?
That makes sense to me, too.
What do you,
right, wouldn't you want to go back and
tell,
and just advise that young, yeah, kid, that young girl,
that was going through a
rough time
or whatever happened. It's like, guess what? You know, you're going to get through this. We're going to be okay.
Right.
And look at what we're doing now.
Mm.
I love using that kind of work with my clients because it's just, it's the truth. The truth is you're here now. Mm. And everything that happened then, no matter how hard it was, you survived. And there's a part of you that made it through.
And also, of course, writing a letter. We have John on the phone. We're going to bring you up in a second. But, of course, writing a letter and not sending it. Like, you could write your parents a letter or write somebody you've
yeah,
had issues with and not send it,
mm-hmm,
and just get out everything. Anyway, John, we hope you're still with us. Bring him up. Go ahead. Hello, John.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for holding.
No problem. I enjoyed the music.
It wasn't a great tune. Good. So tell us about your writing, any kind of writing that you've done.
I always was a scribbler, and I would write these musings and put them on everything and lose them, and sometimes I'd come across them a year later, 2 years, whatever, but I never remembered the context with which I wrote them in. So I discovered the memo function on my phone, and I've always been in marketing and advertising and what have you, and I always had this belief about how I thought marketing should be done. So with the memo function on my phone, I started to write things, and whether it was stream of consciousness or a temporary surge of clarity or whatever, but I started putting these things, titling them and numbering them, and it grew to about 300 pages.
Wow.
And I would go back from time to time and read some of the stuff and say to myself, wow, I can't believe these thoughts and ideas and concepts are coming out of you. So I showed it to a friend of mine who then knew an editor at a publishing house and brought it to them, and the editor said, if you would do some rewrites on this, we'll publish this for
you.
Get
out of here. So, that's outstanding.
Yeah, so I'm doing the rewrites, but the amazing thing is when I would write this stuff, I was in a flow. And now to
right,
go and sit down and do it in the cold light of day, I find it so hard to change this stuff or to, you know, so I'm not a writer, obviously. I'm whether I was a vessel for something, universal mind or whatever, but this has been an incredibly difficult thing, but the original stuff was just great because it just flowed, and now the challenge is to do it again in the cold light of day, so to speak.
Right? Is it the pressure of, you know, being getting it witnessed and championed and almost published, making it harder to do it
I'm not sure, because when I would write these things, I could be doing anything and it would just come upon me. And I found that the ideas were just so much more pure. Mm. And now to have to go back and edit them, and there's a particular context that they want me to follow with this stuff, which I think diminishes some of what the purity of this was, not to toot my own horn, and I'm sure every writer
no,
feels
I'm
this
sure,
way.
I know. And they don't want to lose the flavor of that either, I would think. They would
no,
want...
they don't, but they want me to, you know, to augment it by being, I imagine, more readable for the masses, so to speak. So
oh,
it's been you know what, the discipline of this I've found very hard, because I wasn't disciplined when I was writing this stuff originally. It was just kind of flowing through me.
I see. I see what you mean. How about your friend? Can your friend, like, give input and have him,
yeah,
him expand?
I'll make it. Maybe I'll make it through this. I mean,
yeah,
I will. It's been a much harder procedure than I thought. But I will say that the tech—I'm not a technology guy—but the aspect of having something right at your fingers that can save it right there for you, so you have that's been wonderful.
And it, yeah,
you know that
and you can do that
great.
On the, you can do that on the subway.
Yes, exactly.
And
everybody should have their phone or whatever it is,
of
and
course.
Just write down what comes across, because you never know what insights you gain and what insights might help somebody else. I mean, we're all connected, we all matter, and my thoughts are the same as somebody else's thoughts, but they might be a little bit different in context. And all of this is meant to help everybody. So I'm a firm believer we should all be writing. And we should also, by the way, be reading a lot more than we read as well.
I love it. All right. Thank you, John, so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you guys very much. I enjoy your show.
Thank you. 212-757-5555. We're all connected. He's saying, you know, my thoughts are no more superior to anybody else's thoughts, but actually putting them out makes me feel good. And now actually somebody else likes them.
Right.
And they want to do something with it.
That's fantastic. You know, sharing those inspirations, it does help us connect to each other. You know, we're having these shared experiences. Mm.
And no pressure. Beautiful. You know, he's talking about, I discovered this memo function on my phone, and I tried it one day, and I just started doing it, and I realized, you know, before I knew it, I had 300 pages of just observations about things. Thoughts and the thoughts that I'm having. One of my 60,000 thoughts for this day. Let me put that on a piece of paper. Let me put that in the memo function. 212-757-5555.
I use that function a lot.
Do
the
you?
Memos and notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do a lot of.
So maybe people on the subway are really writing their memos, writing their memoirs.
We have a friend who writes subway stories when she's having a long ride on the subway.
Yes, we do.
And she writes funny little stories about people on the subway.
Yep.
I think it's a beautiful way to pass the time. Be creative.
I used to use the voice memo on the phone, and I did this for quite a while. Every day I would try to record just a 60-second stream of consciousness where I was at mentally, how I was feeling.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
And I think I kept it up for a few months, and then I stopped doing it. But there was some interesting stuff in there.
I'm sure there
Love
was.
Love it.
212-757-5555. We have Austin on the line. Thank you for holding. I know you've been on a while.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, Austin.
How's everybody?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good. You know, I just came in at the at halftime.
Okay.
And I just heard a little bit.
So let me read this to you. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you.
Am I supposed to decipher that? could you read that again?
Thanks
famous
for your
famous
honesty.
Poet. In the first half, somebody told us that it was from E.
Okay, could you repeat that one more time, please?
Since feeling is first, who pays any attention to the syntax of things will never wholly kiss you.
Is that another way of saying ignorance is bliss? I don't know. You know, that's what I read in between the lines.
I can understand. I understand.
Yeah.
We'll close out the show with what we were told in graduate school about all of that. But tell us why you're calling. Tell us your experience.
Well, I'll tell you, as far as writing, I had from the very beginning a very difficult very directly mechanical problem. I had dysgraphia. And for those out there who may not know, it's not that popular a term, not a term, it's not exactly a household term. Dysgraphia is literally the inability to write legibly. Mm. You know, so, and I grew up at a time where there were no computers, and then we were expected to write cursive, and I felt horrible, and there were many teachers who felt there was something intellectually diminished about me, because I had dysgraphia, and on top of that, for a whole bunch of complicated reasons, I never developed very good grammar skills. I have a very good, my vocabulary is like, so there's such a complete asymmetry in my vocabulary and my ability to punctuate. Mm-hmm. I can't punctuate to save my life.
Sure.
So therefore, and I'm kind of a late, well, I'm not a late, oh, I am a latecomer, though. I've been on the internet for about a decade now, but relative to others, you know, when you don't punctuate properly and someone doesn't like what you're saying, they will latch right onto that and make it seem like you diminish a piece of nothing. How dare you even, start up the computer?
Yes.
It's as if they will, it's another form of saying, you know, you are portly and unattractive, but they don't use the words portly and unattractive.
Right.
You know, it's just another way. It's an ad hominem attack, basically.
Yes, I can get that. And how have you survived it? I mean, what's your secret? Because you sound like fully intact.
Well, I went through hell, and you know, I did the psych med stuff, not on my own.
Oh, so you got depressed? You were depressed at some point.
I was anxious as heck, and I was more an anxious type than a depressive.
Okay, sure.
And I've been off that stuff for 22 years and fine and well and doing good and eating well and taking my suppies and all that stuff and exercising.
So let me ask you, do you ever write just for therapeutic purposes, like what I'm struggling with today or, you know, what's been a stress in my life is, this and
you know.
Go ahead.
You know what? How I think I process that at this moment. I think I basically do that with the on YouTube, because I'm one of these people that doesn't use my name on YouTube. So I try not to be abusive, because there are people who use the incognito factor. But I will speak my mind and be more open about myself. And I think in interacting with people, that I see that as sort of my therapy without necessarily.
Yeah.
I don't think of myself as someone being able to do the journal thing at this point. It seems too structured and not for me.
Mm. No, that makes sense. I can get that. And you found something that works for you, so that's all terrific.
Right. I'm able to sort of process my thoughts and engage people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on Facebook it's different. I feel more censored on Facebook, because I don't necessarily want to put my life out there when my identity is so bare and naked. You know that. I'd rather be a bit more discreet up on good old Facebook.
Yeah.
So,
what about physicality, Austin? What do you do to embrace like the physical world in any way? Do you exercise? Do you walk?
I exercise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I dance, you know.
Tell me about the dance.
I'm a good. As a matter of fact, I was listening to the tune that you have in Hold, Boss Gags. That Boss Gags. That's on loop there.
And I'm trying.
You know, it's almost impossible to dance to, because it's kind of 120 beats per minute. It's too fast and too slow one in the same time.
and it's
more of a head funk. It's more of a head funk. It's not a body funk.
That's a good point.
It's not like. Yeah. It's not like Afropop, where you know the body just falls right into it.
Right.
That tune is hard to dance to without looking dorky, because it's not it's a headspace kind of tune. I'm not criticizing it.
No. It keeps people holding.
For me, it's not a dance tune for me.
But you do dance, so you get an outlet and a sense of intimacy with dancing.
I talked about this last time, as a matter of fact, when you guys were talking about. Sensation, or which body, which sense do you feel more?
Smell.
And I think for me it's a combination, but I am very obviously to sound, you know, vibration and sound.
I got it.
If music moves one that much, obviously, you know, I never got too much into the protest music, though I am in accordance with it philosophically.
Sure.
I just have never been able to fuse music to something where I don't want to be fixating on lyrics. I just want the music to carry me on its crest, you know, and not have to be intellectualizing. Bob Dylan, I never got it. I would feel kind of guilty because I admire his art, but I just can't relate to it. I'd rather read a poem than have deep lyrics and music attached to it.
I got it. Your connection to the universe is through your feet and through your body.
My feet and my head. And
you don't need to write it down on paper.
And my fine motor skills are really stinky, you know. So
I'm thinking. Yeah.
Not that I ever had the inclination to smoke, but I would never, out of vanity, I wouldn't smoke because I could never hold a cigarette and look cool holding a cigarette. You see,
like you, it's great to have the typing, the sort of computers and the typewriters to help you out,
and not to mention good gross motor skills. So the athleticism and the dancing is something I can do well. So. Thank goodness for that. Post
a video on YouTube of you dancing. We'll all you'll get at least three.
I'll see about doing that. I'm not someone who's naturally drawn to that, but maybe this will be my debut on the YouTube dance phenomenon. You know.
Thanks a lot.
Who knows how many hits I get at the end of the day? Right.
Right on. You bet.
Okay, folks. Thanks so much for listening to me. You're wonderful.
Thank you, Austin. Thank you so much.
Take care now. Bye bye.
Bye bye. 212-757-5555. Immune functioning was found to be boosted with expressive writing. HIV/AIDS patients who wrote about negative life experiences produced higher CD4 lymphocyte counts. In another study, people who wrote about traumatic experiences before receiving the Hep B vaccine had a stronger immune response, producing more antibodies.
It's relaxing. It's relaxing
it's
to
healing.
Write. And healing.
It heals the body. It heals
allows,
the system. Writing, expressive writing, narrative expressive writing heals the body, heals the system, and heals the mind because the mind can close the chapter on something and have it in a synopsis in a accessible way instead of it being lying there in this emotive state.
And there's also the wonderful ritual that a lot of people will do with their journals. Burn them? Yes.
Whoa.
What good is that?
It's a ritual to let go of a past. To be able to move on, to send it back to energy. You know, there's a ritual. It's like I write it down and I'm letting it go.
Yeah, I could see that.
And just cleansing it from my life. Or people will have different rituals around, you know, disposing of their journals. That it's like, okay, that's done.
It's done.
And now I'm in my life right now. And the new chapter has begun, right? A new chapter is starting. There's all kinds of possibility. That's also the thing about a blank piece of paper. It's possibility.
Mm.
Who knows what's going to come out? There's all kinds of potential there. Could be ideas, could be feelings, could be, you know, all kinds. You know, it's a blank page, which can be terrifying for some writers, but for someone just
not
doing
in the morning.
Their journal.
If you do it the first thing in the morning when you're not in a rush, if you need to wait till Saturday when you won't have to rush and you'll get a good night's sleep, try it. Just wake up and peacefully, calmly reach for the it can be a spiral notebook. That counts as a journal. It can be a black-bound book. It could be anything.
Yeah, I have a suggestion. If you leave time for snoozing in the morning, when your alarm first goes off, in that 7 to 10 minutes of the snooze alarm, you can write.
I'd wait till the second snooze, if you don't mind.
That's fine. But that's a great way to time yourself.
I agree.
10 minutes.
We have time for maybe one or two more calls, 212-757-5555. We are happy to be back after the fun drive. It's been a long time. We're glad to be taking all of these calls today.
I wanted to say again
about the fun drive that, yes, on November 17th, Matthew Grace is here at the Positive Mind Center to talk about his book. Those of you that ordered it, it's November 17th at 12 o'clock. Here at 119 West 57th. You can reach us about any of your premiums here at 212-757-4488, and we'll set up the appointment for you and a therapist if you use that premium last week. And the Matthew Grace workshop will be on November 17th on Saturday. And then the first one was a flash drive, right, Ben?
Yep.
We'll send out those flash drives as soon as we get the addresses from WBAI. 212-757-5555.
I'd like to invite our listeners to write to us on Facebook. We are at The Positive Mind on Facebook. Like us, join us, write us something about, you know, what you've heard, what's interesting for you, any experiences that you want to share. It's a wonderful community, the Positive Mind community. We'd love to hear from you. We will respond. Yeah, get writing. Share. We want to hear your story.
We have time for one more caller, and it's been great hearing from all of you. Thanks again for your participation, for sharing with us, for just being so honest and so brave, really, to pick up the phone and really talk about stuff that you may not even be comfortable talking to people you know about. And you know, a lot of people are very nervous calling into the radio show,
for
Kevin.
Sure.
And I just want to say thanks to those of you who get past that anxiety and do it. We have George on the line. Hi, George. Thanks again for calling us.
Hi, guys. Great show. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
All right. Many years ago, I was foolish enough to put a lot of the weight of the world on my shoulders, looking at all that's going on in the world and how so much of it is just repetitive. And it seems like we're in this loop that's going to come around again.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, something just forced me over to the computer. I'm not a writer by trade or anything like that, but I got over to the computer and something just started coming out. And I had a nervous breakdown as I was writing. You can call it a nervous breakdown, whatever you want to call it. It was a spiritual, it turned into a spiritual journey. And when I had revelations, I thought they were like revelations and stuff. It was really very traumatic.
Wow.
And still traumatic. It's still traumatic.
Okay.
And a lot of the stuff, you know, a lot of the stuff that I wrote has happened, will, you know, seems to be happening. It was like almost prophetic, like, you know, like, because you could, I mean, it's not hard to see the future if you look at what's going on around in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I got inspired by this writing, you know, for good and bad. It was very manic. I was very manic, you know, because of these revelations.
I see.
And like an idiot, I asked for a sign. And the next day, the Twin Towers came down, because it was like a spiritual, godlike, you know, journey for me.
Right.
Because I took the weight of the world on to see where mankind is going. You know what I mean? I think more of us have to do that because, I mean, it's nice to just worry about yourself, but we are, as a species, we are becoming dangerously close to either extinction or whatever. I mean, in my opinion,
your feeling world. That's how it feels.
Yeah, well, also, like, scientists are worried about it. You know, there's a call for it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's something that's very, very deep, and it's very scary, you know, and to get that out, at least. And, you know, it's really bad because, you know, as you're having a nervous breakdown, you say things, obviously, that you would never say to some normal person, and you say them in ways that you would never say them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some things are childish because you're just crying out for help. It's just really... But like an idiot, I published it. So that was out there for anybody. It's out there for anybody. But like I said, nobody's buying it, and I'm not advertising it. But I should be. I did send it out at my job, and I did pay price, but I did speak my mind. At least some people know, and I said, at least I got to say what I wanted to say before something should happen. At least I got to say something. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's called Temporary Insanity, Call in the Cavalry. And it's a book of poems and this nervous breakdown revelation.
Send it to me. Maybe we'll have you on as a guest one day and we'll talk about this.
I would like to do that because I think it would be something you could help me with.
Sure. Send it to connect with me on email and then I will tell you how to get it to me. But I'd certainly say the title again.
Temporary Insanity, Call in the Cavalry.
I love it.
And like I said, like one of the poems is well read. You know, it's real short. It's just cute little poems, but they have a little meaning to them. But I think you would like people would like a lot of it, and some people would be turned off by a lot
Kevin,
of it. But I think these
Kevin at thepositivemind.com.
Kevin at thepositivemind.com is where I should send an email.
I'll look for it, George, and we'll correspond starting today. Let's do this today.
What is it, Kevin?
At thepositivemind.com.
You got it, Kevin. I'll
Thanks,
send it
George.
To you.
Look forward
like
to
it.
All right. Thanks for calling
Have a good
us.
One.
You too.
Bye-bye.
So we ended with a nervous breakdown, you see?
Yeah.
And processing it through writing.
Yes.
processing it through writing. There's so much to ask him also. I'm glad I'm going to get his email, because I'm wondering if he's written since and how to process the actual 9/11 experience. Where were you on that day? Here's a chance possibly to put that in perspective for yourself, to come to some closure with that experience. Some people really haven't fully digested it. It's a perfect prompt for a piece of writing that we're talking about, narrative expressive writing, where you have a beginning. It was a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Wasn't it a beautiful day that day?
Yeah.
So you could start, it was a beautiful day. And then you can go ahead and write for 3 to 4 days of a week for 20 minutes, no more than 30, about this one experience and see how it feels when you're finished with it. You might be able to tuck it away in a place where it won't be so threatening. It won't be so dangerous.
It
won't be so traumatizing and infuriating, because it happened and it's now 17 years later and we're moving on and the world is moving on. And if you haven't put it in a place where you can move on, writing can be the way to do it. So, Nasima, thanks for being here today.
Thank you. I love being here. I loved hearing from all of you today.
Ben, thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure.
And thanks to the audience bringing us back with Talk Back at the Positive Mind. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
We're here every Wednesday, 3 to 5 p.m. Catch us next week. Great to hear back.